Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's episode of Please Elaborate. I'm your host, Ella Mary Campo, and I'm here with my guest, Jamie.
Hi, I'm Jamie, and I'm a third-year anthropology student.
Yeah, so Jamie's an old childhood friend, so I thought we are going to have a great time talking about queer discourse online.
Yes.
Let's get to it. So, Jamie, you are someone with a pretty big following online. I think it's like 45,000?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
And, like, you've been online forever, and you've been queer online for a while.
Yes.
How do you feel about it? Just thoughts out the gate before we start talking about it.
Well, I don't know. There's definitely different ways people approach being queer online, and I've always been very loud about it, I feel. It's never been, like, the main focus of my account, but it's also definitely how I found community, so how I, like, put myself out to find community kind of thing.
That's cool. Okay, so basically, we're talking about respectability politics, what it means to live as a queer person online, and the good and bad of, like, queer representation online. Most of it's going to be the bad, though, because you all know the good.
Yeah.
Why would we talk about that for an hour? We would focus on the worst parts of it. Yay!
Exactly.
Right? So first, I want to establish what it actually means to be queer. You know, not everybody listening is going to be queer and necessarily understand this experience. So I wanted to talk about queerness as a sexuality versus as a way of living outside of norms. When we talk about, like, gay right-wing grifters like Ariel Scarsella and Caitlyn Jenner, these are people who live their lives trying to separate their queerness from its socio-political implications, where living as a queer person means engaging with the ways in which your identity clashes and defies cis-heteropatriarchal norms and expectations. So for me, as a bisexual cis woman, that means unpacking the heterosexual norms that I've been taught about, like dating and romance, and learning about my queer history, and decentering men, and presenting the way I feel most comfortable, right? Regardless of expectation. So, something I do is I don't really shave at all. I have, like, super hairy armpits, I have super hairy legs, and that makes me feel the most comfortable in my body. I feel so at home like this, but a lot of people don't like that about me.
Yep.
And say it! So, you know what? Free the pit.
Yes.
You know, that's what I believe.
Strong agree.
So for me, queerness means queerness as an identity, so as a noun rather than as an adjective or a label placed upon you. You're not just a gay person. You are someone who's living a gay experience. So what does queerness mean to you?
Being trans and specifically trans non-binary, I feel very queer in every aspect of my life, just in the fact that everything I was brought up with never made any sense for me, like, even as I was a child. So it's just, like, as I grew older and older, learning that, like, it's not an inherent truth that you have to live a certain way, and that there are, like, thousands and thousands of people throughout all of history and throughout, like, current day life who live differently to them, like, normal heteronormative ideology stuff you've been taught since you were a kid.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've been reading a lot about, like, female masculinity and, like, queer history and, like, female husbands, which not necessarily your case, however, it's just, like, been really interesting to read how, like, gender nonconformity has always been present and in
Absolutely.
Very interesting ways. So, okay, now we need to talk about living life as a queer person online. I want to start with, obviously, just the little caveat about what's good about it. Okay, you win with your positivity, okay? Live, laugh, fucking love, okay? Obviously, queer spaces online are a great place to learn about queer identities, especially for me as someone who was questioning and not sure where she fell in the acronym for several years.
For a long, long, long time.
And you watched it all, and you watched it.
Stood by the sidelines.
Stood by the sidelines.
Supporting.
Yeah, and you know what? I love that.
Yeah,
thank you so
much. You gotta take your time.
You gotta take your time, even when everybody around you is like,
yay! We were waiting, but that's okay.
We were waiting, but it's okay. You know what?
The closet was glass, girl.
Actually,
the closet was glass.
Not only, I think, was it glass, I actually don't even think I was in a closet because I don't think I ever knew and hid it. I was going through my journey publicly and with everyone around me. It was actually the closet as a stage. And you are the performer. Like,
yes.
Like, I was never hidden about it at all. Obviously, also, it's great to see people who share your experiences, to get to know about what an identity means and kind of find yourself in that. It's good to see queer joy because a lot of the stories we see are like, you know, new trans person gets, like, heinously treated. And then you're just like, is this my fucking life? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, right now it's not doing well.
No.
No. Nowhere. It's doing well nowhere.
No,
like,
absolutely nowhere at the moment, unfortunately.
But. Yeah. But you know what? There are some online spaces that are great, and yeah. that shows.
And at least it provides a spot to talk about it.
Yeah.
A spot for that to be an ongoing conversation that you don't feel barred from because you can like easily access it.
Which yeah. is
a benefit of being able to participate in the suffering, I guess. You know, like at least having some agency within it all.
Yeah, and like having some company in your misery.
Yes.
It sucks to be alone.
It really does.
Just even if you can't access in-person spaces or you don't have a lot of queer friends and you don't, or you don't have access to like a space that like kind of publicly acknowledges queer people, that an online space must be amazing. I personally, I have like 2 straight friends, maybe like 3. Shout out, you know who you are. But like that wasn't on purpose. I think we all just grew up and then ended up gay.
I know, it's crazy. We didn't know, and yet so many of all the childhood friends we know are now queer.
Yeah.
Like pretty much all of them.
I know.
Which is kind of crazy to think about.
It's crazy that we all just
it's flocked. Crazy that we all flocked at such a young age, not even knowing what being queer was, and then just like grew up and did our own thing. Like we weren't necessarily like attached to the hip or anything, and then just turned out gay anyway.
It's really funny. Yeah. I find that really hilarious. And like other people I know who are queer are like, yeah, I have like no queer friends. They're all straight. And I'm like, I'm sorry for you. Sorry, queen. While there is a lot of good about being a queer person online, you know, I'd say the majority of it is good. That's why people are on it for the most part. The meat of the episode is obviously talking about the more complicated parts. So let's get into it. Online spaces are incredibly scrutinizing and intrusive to creators. I mean this term extremely loosely. I'm not just talking like big level capital I influencers. I'm saying anyone who posts publicly on the internet is a creator to an extent and will get scrutinized to the same degree.
Yep.
When all you see is a performance, and we establish this as a performance because everything that's posted is chosen and then it's projecting an image regardless of whether that image, you know, is like good or bad or whatever. It is projecting an image. And so there are people who treat others online like characters to pick apart and ask about without considering the impact on the person behind the screen. So this obviously is amplified when you're perceived by the public to be crossing gender and sexual norms because people do not know how to respect that. You are seen as an oddity or something to be studied or looked at or scoffed at because you are different.
Yeah.
So, in public online spaces where your identity becomes a discussion point for people because of the separation we have from the real people who are posting, picking them apart becomes socially acceptable, at least to an extent, right? Like, in every comment. So, not just, like, on queer spaces, you will see just, like, a man, for example, who deviates in any way from the, like, rigid, straight man expectation. And then all the comments are like, denial is a river in Egypt.
Yeah.
And it's like,
maybe he's just happy.
Maybe he's just like happy and doesn't hate women.
Yes.
Like, if the requirement of to be a man is hating women, like,
hating women, hating yourself, and hating most outward expressions of joy.
Yeah, and it's just like, that's not a life. Like,
yeah, it's unfortunate.
That's the thing, right? Even if there was reason to suspect that they were queer, why would you post that? Like, why would you comment like, hey, gay? Like, that's not helping anyone on their journey. You know, I, as someone who, you know, grappled with it for a long time, like, even though people were telling me, queen, that's so queer of you, like, it didn't change the fact that I wasn't in contact with that part of me yet and couldn't really acknowledge it. Not in a bad way. I just, like, didn't occur to me, man. Sometimes it happens. I think the scrutiny has also been exacerbated in recent years by the increasingly frequent identity politics. So what are identity politics? And now I'm going to read a citation from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. I use it frequently for, guess what, my philosophy major. It's handy. The latent phrase identity politics has come to signify a wide range of political activity and theorizing founded in the shared experiences of injustice of members of certain social groups. Rather than organizing solely around belief systems, programmatic manifestos, or party affiliation, identity political formations typically aim to secure the political freedom of a specific constituency marginalized within a larger context. So, while identity politics themselves aren't inherently bad, as identity politics need to be used, like, when talking about the oppression of marginalized groups, like people of color or women or queer people, it's also been weaponized to hate people of a given identity by virtue of them existing. What example comes to mind, folks? Right? If we're focused on hating a certain group of people, I mean, in this case, obviously trans people, and more often trans women, then you aren't really focusing on all the harm that they are perpetrating. Like, that the politicians are perpetrating, let's be clear. Not the trans people who are doing absolutely fucking nothing wrong. Let's be clear.
Mm-hmm.
Get that out of the way, in case you somehow have made it this far in the podcast and thought, like, I was gonna align with that. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
The way that, like, identity has become something to scrutinize and is something that is, like, almost publicly decided, and by that I just mean that the public will scrutinize you and call you gay, even if you aren't, because they decide that about you. It leads us to talking about trends and discourses of queer people on the internet! To add, like, the internet is a deeply public place, so there's no way to prevent things like jokes or discussions about queerness from those, like, from being made by those who aren't in community with us. So what might feel like a joke when a queer person says it easily might not be when it's co-opted by a cis or straight person. Even queer people are contributing to the over-policing of queer identity, especially online. And though I would argue it's, like, often a reactionary attempt at preserving an in-group community, it's still not effective and it's still harmful.
Yeah.
So, the first trend I want to talk about, and I really want to hear your thoughts on this, is the why do poly people look like that trend? I wanted to talk about it because it got really popular and didn't just exist on the queer side of TikTok. Basically, one guy posted a video asking why all poly people look like that. Yep, that was the whole TikTok. You can look it up. The implication is obviously that poly people are identifiable because they don't look normal and that this is funny. Do you have any thoughts on this trend just out the gate?
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, as someone who's poly, I would love to say that I'm sitting here looking like any sort of...
looking like that?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a stereotype, but unfortunately I am that stereotype.
Uh-huh.
But it is strange to see how people, like, weaponize that and, like,
mm-hmm.
use it in such specific ways and co-opt other things that they hate and add on to it. Because
yes.
At first, I feel like it very much started with, like, they're obviously talking about, like, the very easy things you can do to immediately deviate from, like, the norm. So
yeah.
Having any sort of piercings, maybe tattoos, and definitely dyed hair. But then very quickly, it kind of snowballed into people adding things like being, like, overweight or, like,
yeah.
having, like, a face that isn't, like, the normal, I don't know, they call it the iPhone face or whatever.
Like, oh,
yeah,
iPhone
like,
face.
Yeah, and, like, people just started adding on more and more characteristics of other things that they dislike and then adding to that.
Yeah.
Very fast, which is just,
yeah, it very much devolved into a way to be, like, I hate people I perceive as ugly and undesirable,
yeah.
and I just want to be able to bash them without
yeah.
it seeming like I'm bashing that, because, like, now I think, like, on most spaces on the internet, if you say, like, I hate ugly people, that won't, like, fly, but if you couch it, like, oh, well, this kind of person is just so cringy.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, we can hate them because they're cringy. And it's like, what's cringy about them? Oh, you just don't like them? Oh!
Oh!
Why don't you like them?
And I think it's also really wrapped up in how people, it's very upsetting for them to see somebody who they don't deem as conventionally attractive not only doing well with one partner, but perhaps doing well with multiple people.
Oh my God,
and
yeah.
showing that being loved for, I mean, not to agree with any sort of, like,
mm-hmm.
you're more lovable if you are conventionally attractive, mm-hmm. but, like, just show that you can be loved for other things as well, and that
yeah.
really, like, shakes people and really upsets people.
Well, it's just, like, it's not that you can't, it's just that the popular narrative is that, like, you will not attract someone, I'm saying this with
yes.
heavy air quotes, if you're not super attractive, and we see this, I mean, like, especially in the alpha male talk right now,
yes.
right, we're seeing this idea that, like, you have to be, like, this, comes back to eugenics, because it always comes back
always.
To eugenics. The top, like, 5% of men get, like, the bottom to the top 90% of women. It's such a weird, fucked up stat. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what to say. Like, it's not real, obviously. But it's the idea that, like, you have to present very traditionally, attractively, and stuff like that to get someone, and they hate to see anyone that they don't deem conventionally attractive. And I'm gonna say they, because the expectation, people's expectations, who is judging this, are based on, like, white, thin, cis, heteropatriarchal norms. It's not necessarily that queer people are not hot, it's just that you've not been trained to like them. Let me tell you, queer people are hot. Some poly people I saw online, like, took it good-naturedly and did some, like, really funny posts about how they find it funny that there's a look that poly people have. Like, there's, like, some people would bring on their partners, and it's like, what do you mean we have a look? And they all have, like, the septum, the dyed hair. And, like, I have to respect that. Like, you take a joke, you live your best. Like, that's funny as fuck. And especially, like, yeah, people who are queer might have more of a visible look because, like, when you have to unpack the expectations put upon you, you might actually realize that you like looking fucking fun.
Yes.
You might realize that you like presenting in a different way. But no one wants to talk about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said, it snowballed and then became so much, like, more harsh and criticizing. And especially just even under the videos of people who were taking it good-naturedly, a lot of the comments were like, yeah, but you're, like, ugly or something like that. And it was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, girl, like, who has the time for that? Like, seriously?
And especially, like, to say poly people look like that, there's no, you didn't attach an adjective to what that is.
Yeah.
You know, like, you never actually explicitly said that slash neg.
Yeah, just so someone's people interpreting took it. Right.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Because, yeah. Like, I would say that, yes, a lot of poly people do look like that. And by that, I mean a little different and a little sexier. But, like,
exactly.
That's because I'm coming at it from my viewpoint. And
yeah.
So it says more about the people who are receiving and interpreting it than it does about any of what was originally being stated, I feel.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But I was also seeing just, like, from queer people, like, other queer people being like, you know, I'm accepting, but, like, Polly's a bit too far.
That's one thing I find so frustrating is I can feel the most safe possible. I can be in a group where I know that, like, my transness isn't being policed, my queerness isn't being policed, like, my body isn't being policed. And then there's that one thing that even the most accepting people who you'll genuinely think would never have any sort of, like, bigoted or conservative ideas, they find out I'm poly and their whole view shifts. And I'm like, that's where you draw the line? That's where you draw the line. I do so much other whack stuff and that's where you draw the line?
I think it's an important time to mention the community meme. I draw the line at animal cruelty, but what's the meme?
It's I can excuse racism, but I draw the line at animal cruelty. You can excuse racism.
That's literally this. That's so true.
The same vibe, yeah.
And I think it's that a lot of people, there's a cognitive dissonance. Like, a lot of people only really unpack what they have to. And so when they're confronted with something they personally didn't have to confront, then they're like, well, fuck. I had already pieced the other things into my worldview. This is not pieced into my worldview.
Yes.
And now I'm going to be angry because that confronts something in me.
Yes. And I also think that the fact that, I mean, we've seen it all throughout history, how when something is not legal, and something is illegal, it's so much more stigmatized. And then as soon as there are policies that change around it, it becomes a much more accepted thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like women being people who have rights.
Whoa!
When they got rights, it became more normalized.
No,
over
I
years.
Still think they don't deserve them.
Hey, I got a he in my pronouns. I can't be saying things like that.
I can be pro woman.
What? And but then, like with gay marriage, once that became legalized, then the thoughts on that became better. And with trans, like, surgeries and hormone replacements, when that became legalized, that became more normalized. But still, we live in, like, a state where the institution is that you can't get married to more than just one person. Mm-hmm. So I think that that really continues to affirm and just, like, reinforce people's hatred for the idea of having more than one partner.
Yeah,
because
that's
it's still illegal in the eyes of not only just, like, ideas, but also literally not something you can legally do to the extent of validating it with, like, bureaucratic documentation.
That's a really interesting point. I think I like that point a lot. Yeah. I also have an idea too that a lot of people don't like poly people because they think about their own jealousy.
Yes.
And they automatically get freaked out. Yes. Like, some people are like, well, if that's a possibility, what if I'm not wanted? And they don't, like, have enough of their own.
And it really makes you turn and, like, face your own insecurities of, like, the idea that you could not be enough for someone or that you would be too much for someone. That this possibility of someone being able to love more than one person and not needing that, like, singular monogamous connection really, like, unsettles people's view of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because they feel like that would be, like, if that's something that's possible, it opens up a whole, can of worms that they just aren't ready to look at yet, kind of thing.
Anyway, that's a great point.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up another TikTok example because I'm chronically online, in case you guys didn't know.
And all my following that we mentioned is on TikTok. I'm famous nowhere else. The small group on one platform.
So real. You know what? Once my video hit 5,000 views once on TikTok, and I was like, I'm literally
chasing that high ever since. Yeah,
I'm so famous. So another example of this was the like crowdfunded poly non-binary person gets asked to wash dishes trend, or the, we'll talk about both of these, or the I don't want to be friends trend on TikTok. So first, the crowdfunded poly non-binary person gets asked to wash dishes trend talks about basically a certain kind of person who like weaponizes their trauma or their past to not do things. But this has been manipulated into being a homophobic thing because it's just like, oh, when that too queer person. Yes. It's not like when the gay guy does it. It's not when the lesbian does it. It's when the crowdfunded poly non-binary person does things, or like the blue-haired liberal, you know? So the thing about these trends is that they seem like harmless on the surface to a lot of people. I mean, to some people who look into this more, it might not have seemed harmless, but like to a lot of people it seems harmless. It's like, haha, but what you have to realize is that it's making it an identity thing. It's attaching the negative personality traits to the identity, right? Like you're not saying, like you said about the like poly people look like that thing, it's not inherently negative until people attach the, oh, but the that means undesirable or unattractive or unwanted. And saying like, oh, of course, like the non-binary poly crowdfunded person can't do these things and they suck as a person. Yeah, that attaches identity to that. That's exactly. Like saying like, oh, women suck. Women can't like, I don't know. Don't ask me to hate on women.
I won't do it. You can't make me.
You can't make me. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's shitty. I don't know. Have you seen it? Have you seen it?
Because yeah, you're right. Like at the surface, it can seem funny. But if you think about it for more than 30 seconds and you think about like, well, why are you talking about that intersection of identity? And why is that the kind of person who needs financial help and who is associated with being traumatized? And so then why are you using all of these things that are just characteristics of a person to then generalize and put onto all people?
Yeah.
And like who have any sort of resemblance to any of that. And like it's just disappointing to see people like weaponize somebody not doing well who maybe is using that to get out of something, but also at the end of the day they aren't doing well. So why are you dogpiling onto them on a trend online that's only vaguely funny and not funny enough to like deserve all the like love and support that bullshit got?
No, it's like, insane.
No, it's just the more you think about it, the more upsetting it becomes. And it's like, yeah, it was funny, haha, at first, but it's just not that funny.
Exactly. Like the more intersections of marginalization that you occupy, the more likely you're going to be traumatized, going to be socioeconomically disadvantaged. Yeah. And so it's just like interesting that the more marginalized you get, the more there's dogpiling on that. Because like, again, we're not seeing like the traditional, it's not like, oh, when the femme lesbian does this or when the like femme bi woman does this. Yes. It's when specifically someone who's hated on from both the in-group and the out-group does this, that everybody feels safe to dog pile on.
Yeah.
So this is kind of an extension. We'll talk about the next trend now, the I don't want to be friends trend using the Lady Gaga song. Crazy to use a Lady Gaga song, first of all, to judge queer people. Let's take a pause here. Little monsters are like, I don't know what, 90% gay? Like,
absolutely. And I mean, Lady Gaga herself has been a drag queen since even before people could wrap their head around a woman being a drag queen.
For the record, do you remember when we went to the Lady Gaga concert?
And you were like, I'm straight. And I spent that whole time being like,
Stop looking at that screen so hard, bitch.
Stop being so excited when a lot more of her clothes came off. And you're just such a gal's gal. You just really like complimenting and supporting the women around you just because you're a gal's gal, right?
Full tea. I used to tell my friend, like my best friend, I used to be like, you know, I just like really appreciate boobs aesthetically. Like, I just like can understand why they're so beautiful. But like, I don't want them. I can just like appreciate why they're beautiful and amazing and like why any man would be so interested in them. Anyway...
There were signs.
I felt really bad. I was always worried about, like, claiming a space that wasn't mine. Queen, not only was that space yours, they had a reserved seat.
They already knew your name when you came in.
Literally. What was the... Yeah, the I don't want to be friends trend. I looked so hard to find one, because, like, my algorithm...
Have you seen mine?
Yes, I have.
Yes, I was wondering if that's why that was on there.
It's not because I saw ones before yours. Yours was like the fifth or sixth
I'd say I was a little later to it, but...
Yeah, I had seen some bad ones before. I'm rarely on evil side of TikTok, but sometimes you get a couple and you're just like, what the fuck was that? And then because I knew I was always going to write a queer discourse episode and this came up, I saved a couple.
Yes.
I didn't save enough, but I did go scrolling last night for some. It took like a half an hour because like...
My God.
You had to fight through all of them, right? Because you can't just like look up... I don't know. It's hard to look things up on TikTok.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm just bad at looking things up. So I found one that like perfectly essentializes this. It said, like in quotes, when someone mentions I like men and now the skirt wearing striped alt sleeve femboy with a wolf tail is staring. And this is like a gay man making fun of another because the other queer person isn't meeting some standard of respectability. This TikTok had 314,000 views and 79,000 likes. This is clearly like in group infighting. Hating on another queer person because you are not meeting a standard of respectability. Like, literally, he says nothing wrong. Like, what? So what if you're alt and you wear skirts? Like, what? Sorry, what is a femboy without skirts? Just as an aside.
An angel without wings.
An angel without fucking wings? Like, what do you want? Just like a bi without their tote bag? Leave them alone. They have those pins for a reason.
Exactly.
Like, it was so weird, and it's just, like, it's bringing the furry thing into it, because furries are also, like, hated on massively, and it's like, girl, leave them alone. Leave them alone.
It's just, like, it's none of your business.
It's so none of people's business.
And, like, it doesn't affect you. It really, really doesn't.
And that's the thing. I think that people love to hate on things that don't affect them, because yes. It just makes you feel more accepted to hate on someone else, because it's you're
fighting
not
fighting for brownie points.
Yes, and this is exactly the point of the episode. Yeah. We're going to start talking about respectability politics. The last thing I wanted to say about this before we get into respectability politics, which has obviously been a thread throughout this, is that all of these trends were used to laugh at queer people in a way that encouraged queer and straight people to dogpile onto the queer community. This is not making the queer community look better. Not to say that, like, you know, we have to worry about optics. However, this is, like, encouraging people to actively mock queer people for being visibly queer and expressing that. Many people were not having nuanced discussions about identity and respectability politics or the genuine issues in community. They were just using these trends as ways to uncritically make fun of other queer people. So this led way to comments and videos from other queer people talking about how, like, they hate poly people or how a certain type of queer person is ruining the community. I think we see a lot of this with, like he, him lesbians and stuff like that, which I'll talk about later.
Amen.
Thank you. Without realizing, like, the ways in which they're validating and justifying the mocking from cis and straight people. Because ultimately, the goal of queerness and queer liberation is being without boundaries and without societal expectation. And so when you conform to that societal expectation, you are not winning yourself anything.
No.
So now that we've outlined some examples, I want to flesh out what we mean by respectability politics. Respectability politics is a term that is used to describe the strategy of conforming to the group in power by making your identity more palatable in order to secure social approval or rights from the dominant group. So, like, often this term is used as it relates to people of color, like when we talk about, you know, appealing to white people and stuff like that. It's used a lot in race studies, like online in academic papers, but it's also now being used in queer studies as queer studies gets more developed and people are becoming more right-wing grifty. The grift goes hard, guys. I actually have a whole plan for the grift.
Ooh.
I, like, actually made a whole plan when I made the podcast. I'm, like, slowly indoctrinating you guys. Just you wait. I'll have to tell you about the grift later. It's so good. So Ariel Scarsella, I mentioned earlier, is an example of, like, a transphobic Trump-supporting lesbian. Sorry if I stumbled over my words. It's because that shit's so unbelievable. Who publicly, like, denies the existence of trans people and trans lesbians. If you go on her Twitter right now, her banner says, "Where did all the normal gay people go?" Like, girl. Like, respectability politics is all about this idea that my way of being queer is okay. I'm conforming to your norms. You need to focus on this other queer person who is less conforming. Criticize them instead. They are the problem, right? It's a politic rooted in the hope that if you don't rock the boat too much, you'll be accepted. But I think what people forget about this is that if someone doesn't respect your identity, they will never respect you as a person or your identity, no matter how much you try to conform. They fundamentally do not think you deserve, like, to exist. Yeah. So, like, they do not care if you're just, like, making less space so that they're, like, you're less in their face. You're not gonna gain rights from that. They're not gonna wake up one day and be like, you know who deserves marriage? Poly people.
Exactly.
Right? So, respectable attitudes lead to policing of identity in queer spaces, and it centers a performance of identity rather than genuine identity. If you're not meeting the standard of respectability, if your identity is too complex, then you're something to be laughed at. We see this a lot, like, you know, it's like the, oh, well, I accepted this, well, like, this is too much now. Like, I think a lot of, I've seen a lot from straight people around me, not, like, immediately around me, but, you know, in the public, because I do go outside sometimes.
Sometimes,
clearly. Like, you know, have you ever seen, like, the, like, I can understand, like, pronouns, but, like, neo-pronouns is too much, and you're just like, do you understand language? Like,
and my thing is, there's always a step back, you know, because there's always a step forward, there's always a step back from that. It's like, they go from, like, yeah, I can understand pronouns, but I can understand neo-pronouns. I can understand wanting to be a trans person who's he, him to she, her, but yeah, I don't binary. Understand wanting to be he, him to they, them. Like, and it's like, you're not going to win any points by being one step behind someone, because they're going to step on you next. Like, that's like,
yeah,
that's just, you're not going to be any safer than the person who is below you.
Yeah, as soon as we, like, start hitting the, like, most marginalized of our society, you know, you're just a couple steps away from that. And I think we're seeing that in the US with the increasing policies. First we saw, like, the deportations of, like, so-called illegal immigrants, and I'm saying that in heavy quotations because, like, for fuck's sake,
what the hell are you on about?
Yeah. And then now we're seeing, like, you know, people who are, like, verified citizens, and then it's like just people who speak out, and now you're just like, what the fuck?
Now it's just anyone who they feel they can do that too.
Right. So you're not protecting yourself by throwing other people under the bus.
You're buying yourself time, maybe.
Maybe.
And even. Heavy on the maybe there.
Yeah, it's a scary time.
Yeah.
We live in a scary time.
We really do.
Yeah. No safe spaces, clearly. Online, sometimes it's a help it.
Yeah.
On the street, also a help it.
Yeah.
So an example of this, like, of, like, having a too complex identity, I'm going to say, in quotation marks, is, like, the way that gender nonconforming or non-women lesbians are treated online. So anybody who's learned about sapphic or lesbian history will know that lesbianism is inextricable with gender nonconformity and transness. I'm using the term lesbianism because it's mostly tied to lesbianism, and, like, bisexual women kind of get lumped into that because if you, like, historically dated a woman, like, they're not going to know you're bisexual because, like, in the 1800s, that wasn't necessarily a term. So we're kind of lumping them all in here. But it is mostly lesbian history. I don't want to, like, overrule that with just being, like, bisexual people. But I will once again, like, suggest that everybody reads the book Female Husbands by Jen Mannion, Stone Butch Blues, which is a fiction, by Leslie Feinberg. I loved that damn book. It's also free on the internet.
Yes, which is crazy.
So go read that shit. Yes. It's free. Like, the author made it free. Like, it's not, like, pirating moment. Like, you can't just read it.
Yep.
It's really good. And then Female Masculinity by Jack Halberstam. So despite lesbianism being inherently, like, outside of the cishet system, some sapphics, like, publicly shame or criticize trans lesbians online, which is, like, crazy. It's like, I saw a TikTok recently to the sound, "You win with your gay stuff." I fucking
love it. My God, yeah.
You win with your gay stuff.
You win.
And the text of the video said, "Me right now," because apparently there's he, him lesbians. And it's just like, dude, there's literally always been he, him lesbians. Why are we fighting about this now? Like, I've been seeing, like, butches, like, their comments are all just like, "You're not a lesbian, you're a man masquerading as a lesbian." It's like, what the fuck? Do we need this right now? Do we need this infighting? No.
No.
I think what it is a lot of people are reacting, and first of all, people don't care to learn about their fucking history. Start about that.
Yeah.
But two, people are reacting in a way to try and close ranks to, I think, protect themselves in this time. And they're doing the opposite of what they want to do.
Absolutely.
Community is not forged in exclusion. Community is forged in mutual aid and helping everybody. And so by saying, "Fuck you, you're not a lesbian," you are not helping yourself and others and your community. This is not what community aid looks like. But I think I'm trying to, like, reason out why people do these things.
Yeah.
I think also just, like, basic old transphobia. Some people are just transphobic.
Basic old transphobia and just, like, a super deeply rooted, like, bio-essentialist understanding of gender, where people haven't explored it at all. Mm-hmm. Like, where people who were born cis and realized that their attraction was different to the norm, but didn't think to, like, look any further into how their gender is attached to their attraction and to their existence inherently.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. I've been trying to, like, read into, like, gender more and stuff like that, especially someone who doesn't have, like, a trans experience. I've been more curious about it because, like, I mean, gender's for everybody, right? And I was like...
Sorry.
No, you're so real for that. And I was, like, looking into, like, Judith Butler and how Judith Butler talks about, like, how gender is actually just a performance.
Yeah.
And it's always a performance because it's your projection to the world.
Yes.
And I thought that was really interesting. And, like, what do we actually, like, feel inside? You know what I mean? And, yes. Like, how tied is it to socio...
Yes. I feel this very strongly. Life. Especially, like, because I'm now on testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I didn't ever think that I wanted the effects of it,
mm-hmm.
but more because I was so... The more and more I learn about gender from an anthropological point, the more and more I'm like, I don't believe in any of this. So
what
I'm
the fuck
trans,
is gender?
And I do understand that there's going to be like a mirage of different, a myriad of different trans experiences.
Yeah.
But I'm just trans because of when and where I live.
Right.
I don't necessarily feel a strong association to the whole idea of being trans because I don't buy into the idea that I was something to begin with. Because I never felt like I was a gender in the first place. Because I never really, like, I understood why people were calling me a girl. And I understood why I was being seen as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood, like, the reality that I live in.
Yeah.
But I never ideologically and, like, in terms of how I felt, understood what that was supposed to mean or feel.
Yeah.
Which is why I feel it took me ages to, start using he, him
mm-hmm.
pronouns at all. And to decide that I wanted to be he, they specifically.
Yeah.
And then to go on testosterone because I knew that it would make this association in people's heads.
Yeah.
That I was agreeing to the binary. And even still, like, I've had conversations with, like, close friends. Like, Sarah asked me about this. Shout out to another long-term friend of ours who also came out as gay.
No!
Even though we met in middle school.
We met when we were five.
Yeah.
Middle school. Five.
Yeah, five. And yeah, because, like, you know, she asked, like, well, now that you're on T, like, do you consider yourself, like, a man or, like, more of a man than before? And I was like, no, I actually feel more non-binary than I ever have now that I'm on T. I just... I'm aware that we live in a society.
I've said that on almost every episode of this podcast. I think it's been every episode.
You gotta understand how the context of your existence is going to affect your existence. You can't live in a void. I'm trans because I live when and where and how I live.
Yeah.
I'm not trans because of some truth that I was something before and that I'm trying to become something now.
Right.
I'm just enjoying feeling better about the physical parts of my body that I can control with modern medicine. But that doesn't mean I'm agreeing to any sort of ideology that there is a gender that I'm trans into.
That's fair. I like that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's a really cool nuanced, like, approach to it. And I think I read something recently from Monique Wittig, Wittig, and she was talking about how lesbians should be considered, like, in her conceptualization, lesbians aren't women because they exist outside of the social definition of womanhood, which is strictly in subservience to men.
Yes.
And therefore, because they live outside of that, they can't really be considered women or have the same experience of womanhood. And it really talks about how gender is, like, very much something that we anthropologically kind of make up.
Absolutely,
and
determine
by how we interact with others. And so in a void, are we really
anything?
A gender? Yeah.
Are you really anything other than just a meat sack holding a bunch of bones together?
My fluids!
Exactly.
I hate that. I hate when I sit down and I can feel my blood rushing. It's, like, makes me aware that, like, I have fluid. Like, I don't like it. Or, like, when you move your head a little too much, you're like, oh.
It's like every time I give myself a tea shot and it doesn't hurt, I'm like, where did all that liquid just go?
Oh, that's unsettling. Where did it go?
And it doesn't hurt and you don't feel it. You've had a shot before. You've had it in
your and it hurts.
You know?
Oh.
Doesn't feel like anything.
That's scary.
And then you just pull back and you're like, well, the liquid's no longer in the needle. So I guess
it's in
somewhere. Me?
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I love that, but that is so scary to me.
It is scary.
Yeah, so to circle back to, like, the poly people trend, respectability politics obviously enforces a certain look to be accepted. You have to integrate with the dominant culture or you aren't respectable enough. So poly people often have to poly people arson time. Poly people often have to deconstruct their ideas of the cishet or patriarchy to, like, even be poly, like, or leave as poly, I would say. So maybe the look that people, like, deem undesirable and criticizable is just, like, a rejection of the norms based on us by society. Like, you can just live how you want, people. Like,
absolutely.
Obviously, there are cases in which it is not safe, in which there are risks you take. But, like, just we're talking in terms of the grand scheme of things. You just, like, can. Like, you have, like, free will.
You really, really just can.
Like, you know what? The world did not end when I posted a pic with my armpit hair. Yep. And I was scared it was gonna end. And then it didn't.
Exactly. And the world didn't end when I moved in with both my partners. And now we've been living together for 2 years.
That's just so beautiful. Happily. I love that.
And like, no matter how upset people are gonna be, I'm still gonna go home and make them dinner. And then we're gonna watch our TV show, go to bed.
Yeah, at the end of the day,
we're just living life.
Yeah, haters can hate from their cold, lonely, empty bed.
Exactly.
Haters can hate.
Exactly.
Yeah, right? And that's also, I think, important to note that respectability politics adheres, like, to the white cis straight norm. Yes. So, like, BIPOC get way more criticized than white people.
100%.
Fat people get way more criticized than, like, thin people. There is so many layers to this. I was seeing a lot of discourse, like, in the... I'm a lot in the sapphic spaces, obviously, because, like, what can I say? I like women.
She's a women-loving woman.
Yeah, and alas, you know, my bisexuality means I like a lot of people.
Yes.
Congrats to me. But, like, I was looking at sapphic spaces, and it was, like, there's a lot of people who, like, just, like, very much, like, this one type of, like, butch kind of person. By butch, I mean, like, on the cusp of, like, masculine and feminine, like, femme mask. And they, like, and they're thin, and they're white, and they have blue eyes, you know what I mean? And it's just like, okay, it's chill to find those people hot and find other people hot, but, like, if you only find those people hot, like, maybe you ask yourself, like, why?
Yeah.
Because, like, there was this trend, and it was, like, you know the trend, like, it was from that game show that was, like, cheesecake, ding!
Yes.
Yes, but they did one.
And it was a lesbian, ding, a bisexual, ding.
Yes.
A stone top, ding.
Yes. Yes. Sorry, some of y'all are way haters. Some of some of the people, like, doing those did not accept, like, so many of them. I'm like, literally, I'm like, I would have accepted basically anything until the end where it's, like, your best friend.
Yes, and you're just, like, a straight girl who only kisses you when drunk.
Yeah, okay, like, obviously I'm not doing that, but, like, I was like, some of you are haters. And, like, the faces they would make, it's like someone would be, like, stone top and they'd be, like, frowning. And it's just like, girl, what do you have against that? Okay.
I mean, I guess more for me.
Yeah, like, okay.
But people really did just immediately reveal, like, how, where the boundaries are. Like, in terms of, like, respectability and, like, their acceptance. Like, they really very quickly outlined, like, what they do deem is okay and what they don't. Which is so disappointing as a queer person, because I thought that you would understand how fucking shite it is to not be accepted.
Yeah.
So why would you want to put that on someone else who's already in the community and has already suffered just like you did?
Yeah. No, did you see the people who would say, like, yes, I love a mask, but, and then say no to studs? And you're like, the difference is that stud is a specifically black term for a mask. And then you're just like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Way to announce something about yourself. Mm-hmm. Way to announce that.
Yeah. And the lack of, like, unpacking it from their perspective. Mm-hmm. You're really going about your day just blind with that thought process.
Yeah.
You didn't think about it at all.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, I mean, not to, like, be too, like, you know, people are mean to bi people, but, like, people are mean to bi people,
unnecessarily,
guys.
Unnecessarily, so.
People are unnecessarily mean. There's a lot of people who are, like, I see, like, in these spaces, like, you know, I just don't want to date a bi woman because, like, I just know she won't have unpacked, like, her, like, heterosexual side or whatever side. It's like, fuck you,
Yes.
Have you ever talked to someone? Like, just, like, talk to them. You can tell if someone's deconstructed just by talking to them. Like,
and also, that kind of reflects to me that you haven't deconstructed enough, because why do you assume that they haven't just based on their sexuality? Are we making assumptions based on sexuality? It's almost like, you haven't deconstructed something.
So true.
So frustrating.
It is, and it's like, you know, like, the fact that you even like men, like, that's, like, gross. And it's just like, man, can a girl live?
What happened to loving people for who they are and who they love?
Yeah, so true.
You're gonna put limits on that?
Yeah.
How lame and how sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking a lot about recently the, to actually low-key bring it back to Lady Gaga, the, like, born this way kind of idea of sexuality. And I don't know how I feel about it, because I think that it was important for the movement at the time.
Yes.
Because
the
problem was it was being pathologized. And so when something is pathologized, the response is to be like, this is a natural thing that occurs in people. So I was born this way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, like, as we kind of progress with queer theory and stuff like that, it's kind of like, okay, well, maybe queerness is a journey that you live.
Yes.
And that maybe it changes because you change as you live.
Yes.
Not changes in, like, a I can turn you straight kind of way. Or in a, like, you know, you just haven't found the pretty enough dress trans mask. Like, what the fuck, you know?
Have you tried growing your hair out again? Oh, God.
Violently ill. Yeah. Maybe you're just a masked lesbian. Maybe you're not... Okay, shut up.
Shut the hell up.
I can't. Sometimes I'm like, I see TikTok. Sometimes I log off. Sometimes I'm like...
Sometimes I have to... If I ever find myself on Instagram Reels, that's when I know that I need to just... I can't look at the comments. I gotta close the app and go to bed.
Yeah, I'm like, touching grass is imminent. Yes. I need to stop.
I need to go and hang out in my community.
Yeah.
I need to go to a queer event. I need to go to a gay bar.
Where are the gay people? Where are the gay people?
Show me the gay people.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so the Born This Way thing I think is interesting. A lot of people still use it. I think a lot of people, like, in older generations yes. who don't necessarily always engage with queer theory still kind of operate under that idea. But I think as we move forward, we need to start thinking about what the true essence of queerness is, and yes. that is defying norms. And so fluidity is defying the rigid binary of norms. So even if you have your identity and you don't feel like that's ever going to change, that's okay. And if it never changes, that's way okay.
Yep.
But like the acceptance of a possibility of fluidity, I think is important here.
Yes.
Right? The idea that like bisexuality is not like 50-50 men, women.
Yes, yes.
That's, nah, man. Bisexuality is crazy and messy. That's why we're all evil.
Yeah. And we have such, like, a lot of people have such an open understanding of the different ways people can exist throughout their life. Like, I don't know, you're not, your political identity can change as you go about your life. What you want to do and, like, have as your profession can change as you go about, like, your hobbies can change as you go about your life. The different shows you like and love and the music you like and love can change, but we struggle to have, because we associate the like Born This Way thing and the whole like inherent biological aspect of sexuality slash gender, people kind of struggle with the idea of like you can like and love different people from when you were a teenager to when you're an adult. And and we can accept that with like you're maybe no longer a diehard Justin Bieber fan.
Yeah. But
because of the attached like biological understanding of sexuality, it's crazy that you used to love a man and now you love a woman.
Yeah, and also like you can hold those realities and they can be both both have been meaningful to you at that time, and that doesn't have to. Like,
you need to live in the present for whatever the present is.
Yeah,
and stop trying to like project into the future versus control the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never know. Queerness is crazy.
Absolutely.
I love being bisexual. It's so fun when two leads of a show are really
hot.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing in the world.
And my poly red flag is that I'm like, what if the three of us just all got along really well? You know, like, I mean, hey, guys, come on.
You see how you're just like,
I'm like, well,
that's so
weird. We don't have to fight.
No one needs to fight here.
No one needs to fight.
Make love, not war.
Yeah.
Peace.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's interesting. This was a really cool episode. This was something I really wanted to, like, write about because I'm very much in queer spaces. I've been in queer spaces since forever.
Me, goddamn,
since
too.
So long. Even though I wasn't queer or wasn't identifying as queer because I've always been queer. Sorry. There have been signs.
There have been signs.
I actually made a PowerPoint about it because we had a PowerPoint night.
Oh, goodness. Long PowerPoint, I'm guessing.
It's funny as fuck. It's pretty long. I'll show you after this because it's really funny. Before we wrap up, I just want to tell you about my grift.
Yes.
Because I'm like, I really planned it out. So you guys can listen. I am revealing the grift, but I don't think you guys are listening at this point. It's 52 minutes in. So grift time.
Yay.
So my whole plan was to start a feminist podcast, then get into the gender essentialism, like kind of like make it kind of turfy, get gender essentialist with it, right?
Okay.
So try to lock into the femcel market because they're untapped potential, right? They've all the like, there's too many right-wing grifters that are attacking for conservatives already. We need to convert the left because like that's a new market, okay?
Yes, yes.
So get into the femcels, then tell them that they are like so much more special than men and get into the gender essentialism of it all subtly, slowly. Gender essentialist.
Yes.
Start talking about your divine feminine, okay? That's when you start selling product. Yes. Just wait. Just wait. Okay, so now that we've convinced people that the divine feminine exists, you need to tell them to tap into that energy. How do they tap into that energy? Great question. By buying my new product, Vagisil. It is a vaginal cream that smells like flowers because to tap into your divine energy, you can't stank like a man. So you have to use this cream that will ruin your pH, but I won't tell them that.
mm-hmm.
in your vagina that smells like, to make it smell like flowers. Because if it smells like anything else, you're actually just not tapped into your divine feminine.
Yes.
Right? It's not natural to smell like a normal vagina. You're just not tapped into your divine feminine. So, obviously this pH, this like cream will ruin your microbiome and pH, and it will get worse. And then when you try to ask me about it, I will tell you that it's because you are so not divine feminine that it's reacting against you and it's your fault. So then they'll buy more.
Yes.
And then that's how the grift keeps going. What mm-hmm. do you think about my grift idea?
You know what? It sounds like a pretty foolproof plan.
Thank you. I've been thinking about it for months. Ever since I wanted to start this podcast, I really came up with this grift just for the podcast. I think I have a really good market for this.
I do. I agree.
Text me. You know my number if you're listening to this. that's how many people are listening. Text me if you really want some cream. I'll find some for you. Don't worry about it. We can really tap into your divine feminine right now. So that was my grift idea.
Love.
Big fan. This was beautiful. Mm. This was a really great time. Do you have any closing thoughts?
No. I mean, thanks for having me. It's been fun to talk about being queer online, because I've been queer online for so long.
Oh my god, so, me too.
Yeah, and it's also, I don't know, it was fun to have you reach out, because I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like, over the years, yeah. I've had a lot of people be like, I've seen you post about being gay. I've been a lot of people's, the one they confess to, and so I feel like I do have, like, some legs to stand on in this kind of a conversation.
I thought you were the perfect person. When I first came up with this episode, I was, like, trying to, like, look at all my, like, people who like fit into different ideas I have.
Yeah.
And you were the first person I thought of for this episode. I was like, Jamie needs to be on this episode. Yes. I was like, I hope it's not too weird that I'm reaching out.
No, it was so good. I was like, oh my god, you want me to be a guest on your podcast?
Being a guest on my podcast? Can we talk about that? That's crazy. That's craziness. Anyway.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that off camera, or off mic, not camera. No one's filming us.
Thank God.
I'm sweaty.
I haven't washed my hair in 2 days.
Me neither. I'm looking like it's hidden by a clip, but I'm greasy under here.
Yeah.
But thank you for listening. Thank you for coming on to another episode of Please Elaborate, and stay tuned for the next one. Mwah!